Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. World War II began in Europe when Germany invaded Poland on the 1st of September 1939. Italy sided with Germany, and then Japan did. Japan had been occupying countries in the Western Pacific region for about 10 years. We stayed out of the war. Most Americans remembered World War I and weren't interested in being involved in another European war. Then Japan bombed Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, and we were in war. Germany finally surrendered on the 8th of May, 1945, so our focus was on Japan. We'd been developing an atomic bomb for years. The first one we dropped on Hiroshima on the 6th of August, 1945. The damage was horrendous, but not enough for the Japanese government to surrender. So on the 9th of August, we dropped another one on Nagasaki. That did it. The Japanese government surrendered on August 15th. This is called VJ Day for victory over Japan. And since Germany had already surrendered, this was also the end of World War II. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine Vet Skip Coriel. You still swimming every day, Skip?
Well, not every day. And I'm not sure other people would call it swimming. It's more like floating with purpose, you know. I wouldn't make a very good Navy SEAL, but I do manage to make it all the way around the shoreline of this particular lake in about an hour, you know. And hey, if I'm not drowning, then hey, I'm doing pretty good. But I go about 4 days a week is what I do, Colonel.
No, that makes good sense. Okay, here's what we have for today. On news and comments by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss future nuclear wars, since Russia is threatening to start using nukes right now. And then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will contribute his warrant wisdom. Air Force Colonel Tracy Meck will discuss STARS, a group of service academy graduates who want to get our academies focused on combat readiness, not critical race theory and pronouns. Then Todd Bensman will discuss our southern border, which includes strife between Texas and our federal government. Then Marine Skip and Gil will discuss the border and books.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. And head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. Now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. Of course, we'll start with the news. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, many of the weapons and supplies intended for the front lines in Ukraine have wound up in the hands of arms traffickers and other criminal organizations, according to a newly released report by the Pentagon Inspector General. Beyond black market reselling, the loose protocols for distributing weapons and aid in the Ukraine also appear to have attracted Russian actors looking to turn these weapons against the Ukraine.
Well, and Mexican cartels are using some of the weapons we ship to Ukraine, too. This is just another example of how our Pentagon isn't doing its job very well. How could they not be following up on how our donated equipment, particularly weapons, is being used?
And a Texas man who posted on Facebook that he was selling his guns was placed under warrantless surveillance by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, which investigated the man and made no arrest, yet passed his info to the FBI to monitor him. Two ATF agents interviewed the Hispanic man, who admitted to advertising his personal firearms for sale. He said he had a habit of purchasing new guns, tinkering with them, losing interest, and then selling them, never for profit. His lawyer said they're monitoring this guy for doing what millions of other hobbyists do, sell a part of their personal collection. That's not a crime. But apparently, the ATF doesn't like people doing this.
This is just plain against the law. Law enforcement monitoring a citizen without a warrant? I thought that in the nation I fought to defend, that the government was supposed to obey the law, too. Yuck.
And the Army is the largest branch of our military, yet it's truly desperate for recruits. Not only has recruitment been decreasing, but fewer recruits are passing armed forces qualification tests, despite the millions of dollars spent on fitness schools. Army vet Bill Merck, a leadership expert and author, notes, "In conversations with others, both veterans and those who have not served, I've witnessed an antagonistic view regarding military service. It's important that we find a solution to counter this negative trend."
He's right. There's also a major decrease in patriotism. Many fewer people, particularly youth, are proud of our nation. And if you're not proud of your nation, why would you want to serve it, perhaps at the risk of your life?
And our military is considering putting armed personnel on commercial ships traveling through the Strait of Hormuz in what would be an unheard-of action aimed at stopping Iran from seizing and harassing civilian vessels. Since 2019, Iran has seized a series of ships in the Strait, the narrow mouth of the Persian Gulf, as part of its efforts to pressure the West over negotiations regarding its collapsed nuclear deal. Putting troops on commercial ships could further deter Iran from seizing vessels or escalate tensions further. This also would represent an extraordinary commitment in the Mideast by our forces as the Pentagon tries to focus on Russia and China. We didn't even take the step during the so-called tanker war, which culminated with our Navy in Iran fighting a one-day naval battle in 1988. While officials offered few details, it comes as thousands of Marines and sailors are on their way to the Persian Gulf. Those Marines and sailors could provide the backbone for any armed guard mission in the Strait, through which 20% of all the world's crude oil passes.
We put armed troops on civilian ships during World War II to deal with Nazi submarines. My father-in-law was a Navy ensign assigned to such a fighting group. We needed to do this in the Black Sea, too.
And Professor Elizabeth Sammet has been an English professor at West Point since 1997. In 2021, she published Looking for the Good War, American Amnesia and the Violent Pursuit of Happiness. In this book, she condemns World War II veterans as violent post-war misfits. Worse, she uses the term Jim Crow to justify the derision of an entire generation of Americans that defended the world from fascism. Quote, the Pacific War, begun in revenge and complicated by bitter racism, has long been eclipsed in national memory by a narrative of liberation focused largely on the European theater. The actions of Army soldiers and Marines are summed up by the phrase bitter racism. She also talks extensively of the Jim Crow Army that won World War II. Again, all of the sacrifices of these service members were to be forgotten because the U.S. military was segregated and its racist personnel policies are all that mattered.
Professor Sammet is a perfect example of a racist. I have no idea why she hasn't been fired by the West Point leadership. The men who fought in World War II fought in the military that existed. They didn't create it, and they fought long and hard and with much valor. We certainly don't need our Army's future leaders to be filled with this nonsense. This foolishness wasn't there when I was a cadet 60 years ago. It's worthy of note that our military fought so well that our military was desegregated in 1948.
And Niger's military junta is severing military agreements with France, its former colonial ruler, firing some of the previous government's key ambassadors, and warning citizens of the West African nation to watch for foreign armies and spies. A regional delegation's efforts at negotiation quickly deadlocked. The junta's announcement on state television deepens the post-coup isolation for what had been the U.S. and allies' last major security partner in the vast region south of the Sahara Desert that various Islamic extremist groups have turned into the global center of terrorism. With days remaining before a deadline set by the West African regional bloc to release and reinstate President Mohamed Bazoum or face possible force, Bazoum in a plea said, quote, I write this as a hostage, unquote, and urged the U.S. and partners to help.
This is a very serious issue, but I don't think we'll be of any help in resolving the problem. I don't think our government is capable. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing, but we can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk with Colonel Tracy Meck about our service academies. At ease, troop, take a break.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HealthVet.net. HealthVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coriel with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. A loyal dog can be a useful force multiplier when it comes to home defense. They have keen hearing and sense of smell and will likely sense danger before their human counterparts. A large, obedient, and well-trained dog can deter and even delay an attacker, giving you time to get to your gun. Even a small dog will provide advanced warning and possibly save the lives of yourselves and the ones you love. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit HomeDefenseShow.com.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. It's been a long time since the Cold War with the Soviet Union ended, since we've had to worry about a nuclear war. But it's back. The blame for this spike in nuclear anxiety belongs mainly to Russian President Putin. The situation from his invasion of Ukraine and his recurring rattles of the atomic saber must also change how we think about our own atomic strategy. And that's easier said than done. Putin has, over the past 500 or so days, destroyed each of the norms that developed during the Cold War to prevent a nuclear arms race and Armageddon. First, he broke the nuclear taboo by casually threatening the use of these weapons. Second, he undermined the consensus against nuclear proliferation by demonstrating that foregoing nukes, as Ukraine did in the 1990s, leaves a nation vulnerable to people like him. Third, he's chipped at the barrier between good and bad uses of fission by turning the Ukrainian nuclear power plant at Zaporizhia, occupied by his troops since last March, into a potential weapon of war. Russian television propaganda and society have followed him and normalized atomic intimidation, sometimes with apocalyptic hysterics. Sergei Karnov, once a Russian defense policy pundit, asserted that the way to restore the West's fear of Russia's power was for the Kremlin to drop tactical nuclear bombs, not on Ukraine, but on Eastern European countries belonging to NATO. The West, he is sure, won't dare retaliate. True, Karnov doesn't speak for the Kremlin, but in the space of a year, the tone of nuclear geopolitics has deteriorated in a way no one considered possible. Putin also suspended the new START, the last remaining arms treaty between us and Russia, and he placed tactical warheads in his quasi-vassal state of Belarus. The growing importance of such tactical warheads designed to win battles rather than incinerate nations is what worries me the most. Russia has over 1,900 tactical nukes, roughly 10 times what we have. And those are the weapons Putin has been menacing with. He seems to think that such limited nuclear warfare can compensate for his army's weakness in conventional warfare. And the tactical warheads, because they're smaller, would blur the line at which we would retaliate with our own nuclear strikes. This assumption is terribly dangerous. It's true that we and some of our allies, trying to control escalation spirals, would decide to punish Putin for the first use of a tactical nuke only with a debilitating conventional strike against Russian forces. But Putin or his successors, faced with catastrophic defeat, would then have even more incentive to use additional tactical nukes. How would we respond to those subsequent strikes? The reality is that game theory cannot reliably forecast or quantify the risk of escalation once even the first warhead detonates. At first glance, the logic of deterrence suggests that we should try to close the gap in tactical nukes with Russia as a part of the ongoing modernization of our atomic arsenal. But only $3 billion of the funds we have scheduled to spend over the next decade are for tactical weapon modernization. Well, it's a mistake to think that enemy powers could trade tactical strikes indefinitely, says Donald Kimball, the head of the Arms Control Association. The damage would be so devastating so quickly, the conflict would either end or escalate to strategic nukes and Armageddon. So there's no military rationale for having lots and lots of tactical nukes. The logic of deterrence instead remains the same no matter the weapon. You need to persuade your adversary that any resort to nuclear warfare will never succeed and will be answered with unacceptable destruction. This suggests that we already have the appropriate strategy for situations such as Putin's war and nuclear bluster. It is first to maintain conventional military prowess so overwhelming that Putin could never gain anything from dropping a tactical nuke. We would obliterate his forces with non-nuclear firepower. Second is to remind Putin that any apocalyptical turn, including nuclear launches, would be answered in kind. The Cold War logic of mutually assured destruction still holds. Then there's China. China, a relatively small nuclear power with about 410 warheads, plans rapidly to increase its stockpile to 1,000 this decade. That doesn't mean that China's a destabilizing factor yet. Its president, Xi Jinping, has restrained Putin by telling his nominal friend not to make use of a nuke lest he lose Beijing's support. But China's ambitions make more arms control more difficult. Even in the earlier time of two nuclear superpowers and seven lesser powers, the theory of disarmament and non-proliferation negotiations has stretched human efforts to its limit. For starters, should we review China and Russia as separate threats or potentially as one combined foe? If one foe, we'd need to scale up our arsenal dramatically. That would be economically ruinous. It would also make China even more paranoid, prompting them to accelerate their production. Then there's proliferation. As North Korea adds to its nuclear stockpile, South Koreans are more likely to build their own nukes. If Iran makes its own warheads, Saudi Arabia and Turkey and others in the region will likely follow. A surprising conclusion for us, nonetheless, is that we already have the right strategy and should stick to it. That, too, is leadership. Not to let wannabe czars and tin pot dictators provoke us into runaway arms races. It behooves us to demonstrate that we, not Beijing or Moscow, are the responsible actor in world affairs, and this is the real challenge. We need to deter Russia and China and all the other adversaries, and to do that, modernization is the answer. And that's mainly about updating existing systems from the warheads to the delivery mechanisms on land, sea, and in the air. And we must signal that we'll always stay open to negotiations with Russia, China, or any combination of countries. In time, and under different leaders in Moscow and other capitals, these talks could take us to good places. Until then, we're right to deter with conventional military superiority and the nuclear arsenal we have. Admittedly, even that doesn't provide much comfort. The dirty secret of deterrence is that it works until it fails. And when it fails spectacularly. And worse of all, our nation's leaders, civilian and military, have shown the world that we are seriously lacking in leadership and reasonable decision-making. These are very, very dangerous times. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have to share this week, Roland?
The Department of Defense recently said there's about a 24% vacancy rate in the Pentagon's cyber workforce, but they have a plan to reduce that by half over the next 2 years. The DoD's cyber workforce consists of about 75,000 civilians, 25,000 military members, and another 75,000 contractors. The biggest issue for the DoD is with the civilian workers, as it's harder to attract and keep those workers. And of course, overall military retention and recruiting have also been an issue. One thing the DoD is going to try to do is to set up a more formal revolving door with private industry through things like apprenticeship programs and employment exchanges. And that's just one of the 38 different initiatives that they have. Others include identifying a group of organizations with exceptional cyber talent to work with, improving recruiting tactics, and leading to remote work and flexible scheduling. And frankly, this is the same thing that's happening in the civilian workforce. If the Department of Defense wants to recruit and train the most talented workers, they are going to have to change the culture at the Pentagon and reform the way it does business. The cyber workforce is extremely important, as the threats to our country are only growing, and defending and protecting our nation in today's digital battlefield has become more important now than it ever has before. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. That was neat. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss problems with our service academies with Colonel Tracy Meck. Then we'll talk about the strife on our southern border. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for some boxing. Box three rounds, take a break, box another three, then stand at ease.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at PatriotFoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off PatriotFoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome Colonel Tracy Mack. Tracy's retired Air Force officer and Air Force Academy grad and is active in a group, STARS, that is very concerned about the focus of our service academies on critical race theory, the proper use of pronouns at the cost of focusing on being combat ready. And I totally share her concerns. Tracy, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Honored to be here. I've listened to your show whenever I'm in the car on Sunday afternoon around here, and I really enjoy it. So it's an honor to be here.
Hey, we're teammates. Let's start with your time in uniform. When and why did you decide to go to the Air Force Academy? And what did you do when you graduated?
Okay. Well, initially, I wanted to be an astronaut. And after reading the book Right Stuff and looking into it, it appeared that being an Air Force officer and pilot was probably the best way to head in that direction. So I got accepted at the Air Force Academy, but quickly found out that I didn't really like flying and I didn't feel so good in physics. So I switched over to political science, international affairs, with a national security emphasis, and ended up going into the security forces career field.
And as an Army guy, I would have called that the military police. Am I right?
Correct. We're very similar. We do law enforcement, resource protection, and after 9/11, the part of our job called anti-terrorism became very important. That's the defensive side of combating terrorism. And then in the combat zones, we do base defense, convoy security, that type of thing. So okay. Very much like military police.
What were some of your favorite assignments?
Oh, I loved in Germany, but I really liked my deployments. I deployed twice at the turn of the century as the Joint Task Force Provost Marshal for two humanitarian relief operations. One was Shining Hope, which was the humanitarian side of the Kosovo operations. And the other one was Atlas Response, which was flood relief in southern Africa. And then I did deploy a couple of times to Afghanistan, once to Iraq and once to Djibouti. Of those, probably, well, Djibouti was definitely my favorite just because I was way outside my comfort zone and got to work with some special ops people down there. But the thing that really changed my career path was the second time I went to Afghanistan, I commanded the Provincial Reconstruction Team, Gardez. And we were responsible for reconstruction and development in Paktia and Logar provinces. So it was what the Army would consider a civil affairs mission, and that was pretty awesome. I liked being on the side of helping people. And after I did that for a year, then I went back and forth between security forces and stability ops at both Central Command Headquarters and the Pentagon. So that kind of became a secondary career field, if you will, for me, even though the Air Force doesn't have a civil affairs career field, but once you get the experience, then people start pulling you back into it.
And your final assignment was at the Pentagon, wasn't it?
It was. It was technically at the security forces headquarters there, but I branched out again and worked with the Office of the Secretary of Defense, Under Secretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, and coordinated and actually worked in the building of the State Department for a while. We were training interagency teams to go back to Afghanistan for the reconstruction mission.
Okay. And after you retired, you volunteered for, is that the right word for, the Air Force Academy and recruiting? Do I remember that right?
Yes. What it is it's called the Admissions Liaison Officer, and they have them all over the country and at U.S. bases around the world. And we're volunteers. Now, if you're a reservist, you can do it to get reserve points, but retirees, you just volunteer. And so I had at one point 46 schools in my local area here, and I would go do presentations and work with any of the students who were trying to apply for the Air Force Academy.
Okay. Now, let's get to our topic. You are an active member of STARS. STARS stands for Stand Together Against Racism and Radicalism in the Services. I said that right, didn't I?
Yes, you did. You got it.
Okay. What's STARS' mission and what's your role in STARS?
Okay. Well, what we do is we seek to expose and educate both the military, the public, government officials about the Marxist agenda that is infiltrating the military and, well, all over the U.S. for that matter. But anyway, in the form of critical race theory, and it's implemented through the diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. And all those words often sound very good, but when you dig into the way that they are being defined and the policies stemming from them, they're actually Marxist. Now, we started focusing at the U.S. Air Force Academy, USAFA, but we often end up expanding to other academies and the DOD in general. And what we want to do is reverse course, basically, and advocate to return to a meritocracy, an apolitical meritocracy for the military, where you get ahead based on your hard work, efforts, talents, you know, your merit. We also look to promote unity and not divisions. And the DEI is right now, from what we're getting from cadets and other people in the military, is it's actually causing divisions based on identity and politics. So it's not unifying, it's divisive. And we need to go back to unity if we're going to be an effective military.
Yes, ma'am. I have often said the only purpose to have a military is to kill people and break things. And if you're really good at it, nobody wants to mess with you. That's called deterrence. And
Yes. That's
the purpose of the military. And you can't have an effective military force if you aren't judging and honoring and promoting people based on ability. And that's what we need to get back to, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, right now, even minority cadets that we talk to don't like this because they feel that they don't know if they got to the academy or if they've got specific jobs in leadership at the academy based on their merit, or did they get them because of some identity?
That makes sense.
Yeah, and they don't like that. They want to know that I deserve to do what I'm doing.
You know, everybody, at least everybody that we want in the military, wants to be judged by their ability, and they want to continually get better, and they want to be recognized for what they have done right. They don't want to be babied along, because how can you be a successful military, put other people's lives at risk in any other way? I certainly understand that. It makes sense to me. It probably does to you too, right?
Absolutely. And when you think about it, when we're recruiting for the academies, we're looking at the top 10% of the kids around the country. So you're not talking about somebody who's been struggling along. You're already talking to somebody who's had all sorts of accomplishments in their lives. They have to have had at least a 3.8 GPA to be considered in high school. You know, so these are not the type of kids that want to be or even need to be pandered to.
Yes. And those are, of course, the kind of people we want leading our nation and our troops in combat. There's more to discuss about racism and radicalism in our military, and Tracy's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines Freedom. Yep, troops, it's time for push-ups. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, well, twice a week usually. Then take a break, but stay in the area. Tracy and I will be right back.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care.
We are leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted.
Our key to success? You.
We bring your voice to leaders calling the shots so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity.
Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Air Force Colonel Tracy Meck about radicalism and racism in our military, especially in our service academies, but everywhere. Tracy, you talked about the fact that the minority cadets you've talked to don't like it, but there've got to be some people that are buying this stuff and are going to take it into our military, right?
Absolutely. I don't know what the percentage is, who buys it and who doesn't, but some of the comments that we've gotten are quite concerning. Like one cadet says, there's real division in the cadet wing on account of the political commissar type position. What he's talking about there is each squadron has a cadet officer, an NCO for DEI, and their job is to educate and mentor the rest of the cadets on DEI type issues, which sounds a whole lot to us like the Soviet political commissars. So that's where that one came from. One of the parents told us in an attempt to make one or two feel inclusive, they upset the much larger percentage of Christians and deeply religious people who are not buying what they're selling. And then another cadet says a lot of people think that it's wrong, but they're too scared to speak up about it. So you can't tell for sure how many are buying into it and how many are just putting up with it because they want to be an officer.
Well, one of the things about our military is the people at the top decide, and it's our job to do what they tell us. But there has to be a line drawn somewhere. The Gestapo in Germany in World War II, when they were ordered to kill all the Jews, said, well, I was just obeying orders. No. That didn't accept that in the trials after the war, and it shouldn't stand now. There comes a point where you're supposed to stand up for your values and the values of our nation. Am I missing something here?
Nope, that's the way it is. And some of the cadets will speak up. But, you know, there's been people that have spoke up in those services in general, like Lieutenant Colonel Matt Lohmeyer, for instance.
Yes.
And he tried to bring the information to his superiors and show them how it connected the critical theories of Marxism. And they ignored him. He even did an IG complaint and they dismissed it. You know, he tried to use the chain of command. So then he went out and wrote a book. And of course, he was asked to leave. So he left. He had to get out of the military just shy of retirement. But that's what happens when you speak up.
And we have to stop that somehow. And that's quite a challenge, isn't it? What do we do? I guess the only thing we can do is encourage our elected officials, Congress, House, Senate, to demand getting rid of this junk and not funding the military if they keep it up. I mean, that's one thing we could do, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And a matter of fact, cause, one of our big things that we do to fight this is to work with people in Congress to educate them on what's going on and make our recommendations. And we've been kind of successful in that. We did have some concerns about the vaccine mandates and pushing an emergency use authorized drug onto people in the tyrannical way that people who were opposed to that were being treated. And we did highlight all of this and send information to Congress. And we believe we had some impact on the mandate being ended in the NDAA last year. And we continue to tell Congress about what's going on at the academies. And hopefully some of the NDAA wordage this year will be a result of that. Now, we're doing really good with the one in the House, but of course the Senate NDAA doesn't agree with what the House says. So we'll see what comes of it when they get back in session in September.
You know, your point's well made about the COVID stuff. By now, there's enough medical evidence to make it clear that, one, it was never a totally approved thing that could be forced on people. And two, an awful lot of people have had serious health situations because of it, yet nobody's accepting saying, oops, we goofed here, and let's back off, and let's not stop throwing people out. That must have been quite a war to fight.
Stopped throwing people out. They have stopped throwing people out, but we still have a long way to go to reinstate the ones that are there still in to the regular career progression, or to get the other ones back in. Now, they're saying that the people that were discharged can apply to come back through the normal reenlistment processes, but there's nothing to compensate for the lost training, the lost promotions, the adverse impact on their careers, not being allowed to deploy, so not getting that in your records, which is often important for promotion. And then there's 54% of the discharges were given a general discharge under honorable condition, which, if I'm not mistaken, makes them ineligible for veterans benefits. And then the other biggest problem was a bunch of the people that were kicked out were, you know, 17, 18, 19 years in, had deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq, who knows how many times, and they were discharged without any retirement benefits after being deployed to combat zones probably numerous times.
That's just obscene. And the challenge is that if these kinds of things that you just got through describing are going on, who knows how many other things are going on that we haven't found out about yet? Because the mindset that will do this, whether it's the critical race theory or the COVID stuff, it isn't stopping there. It's not a one-stop or two-stop thing. This is an attitude that needs to be dealt with, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. We're not looking out after our troops anymore. It's all about ideology. Readiness and mission effectiveness doesn't seem to be as important as adherence to the latest social ideology trends.
And that is so contrary to the reason, to the purpose of having a military. I mean, this is at a time when we have more military challenges, Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, than you could shake a stick at. And we're making our military less effective. And we're trying to push that decrease in effectiveness into the future. Holy cow. We got to get active. And I'm guessing STARS is one of the few ways you can do something. Talk to us about that. What can people do if they contact STARS, or what can that do?
Well, they can go to our website at STARS.us and explore. We've got an extensive collection of information on CRT, the DEI, the vaccine mandates. I mean, you can read there for hours and educate yourself, and then go out in your community and see if this stuff is going on, and be empowered with this knowledge to fight it on the local level. You can also sign up for weekly headlines document that we send out just to highlight different articles that have been published within the last week. And we have a quarterly situation report script that comes out that can tell you what it is that STARS itself has been doing. Another thing you can do through the website is to donate. We don't have paid staff. We only have one person that's paid, and that's basically our IT person. Our whole entire leadership team and most of our workers, except her, are all volunteers. But we still need money to be online, to sponsor or go to events where we can make presentations and get our message out, and all that costs money. So we're more than happy to take donations. And the other thing is you can volunteer. Like I said, we're a volunteer organization, and we could do a lot more if we had more people that were willing to dedicate some time to help us.
And to that, I say amen. This is our country. We're supposed to be good stewards of the country. We're supposed to take care of it. It's not supposed to take care of us. Tracy, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your insights and for sharing. Thank you for your service in uniform. Thank you for what you're doing in STARS now. Our country needs you and the STARS team. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and you have a wonderful day.
We're off to a great start. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour talking with Todd Bensman about the crisis on our southern border, how the state of Texas and the U.S. government are in conflict. And then Marines Skip and Gill will present border and books. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 30 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water, and finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.